Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. Once again, our co-host, Daniel McAdams, will be Skyping in from Virginia. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well and anxious to save some money because we're going to talk about the excesses in the military budget, not the defense budget. You know, we don't want to cut a nickel out of defense, but
exactly.
We'd like to deal with the militarism of a budget that makes us less safe. And this comes from an article and a report coming out of Brown University, and they do an annual report. It's the Watson Institute, and they decided, I guess somewhere along the way when he did the arithmetic, that the government may be fibbing to us. Can you imagine such a thing? They're claiming that our government, which says, well, these 16, 17 years of war in the Middle East cost us $1.5 trillion. You know, that used to be a lot of money, but these days that's pretty puny because the Brown University people come up and say, you know what, it's closer to $5.6 trillion. And, of course, I think it's going to turn out that the theme of our program is going to indicate that there's a lot of costs that aren't even put into the $5.6 trillion, although they do a good job in adding up the right thing. So I'm sure you haven't been totally surprised that the government has fibbed with us a little bit on how much of our money they're spending.
Yeah, I think the Watson Institute does a great service because – you know, the Pentagon and the government is going to try to minimize the costs. And the Watson Institute says, look, we've got to factor in all these other things. It's not just how many guns you send over there. So they factor in the Pentagon spending. They factor in the State Department security budget. They factor in Veterans Affairs, which you can't discount, and Homeland Security spending. And they also put in the U.S. financial support to its allies fighting the war on terror. So I think it just makes perfect sense that you would add those things in. I don't know why you'd want to discount them unless you wanted to have an artificially lower number.
Right. And when we're involved in fighting wars that have nothing to do with national defense, it has to do with national interests, you know, which means that special interests of some corporations. But as far as I'm concerned, when we're fighting useless wars that make us less safe and much poorer and in greater danger from terrorism, I would say this money they're talking about, these trillions of dollars, they're down a rat hole. How could it be any better than, you know, bailing out the rich who made a lot of money in the boom times and then they get into trouble and the middle class has to bail them out with more appropriations and more inflation? So this is a boondoggle in the worst sense of the word. But the real problem is they control the propaganda. And I think this is a loss of liberty and a loss of honesty by our government. The propaganda is so strong that the people, if they were really objecting, they'd be raising Cain about this and demanding that it stops. And so far, the noise hasn't been strong enough because it seems like not enough people have suffered from it. They put this in some other category, and they don't connect the abuse in the military spending with the economic problems here at home. Everybody knows there's a problem economically. You know, the bottom half of our society is very poor, and they have essentially no wealth compared to the top three individuals in our country owning equivalent to what the 50% owns. So they don't understand why that has come about and why just saying, well, the government needs to give me more money when the debt is astoundingly high. And, you know, that's another thing. You can assume that much of this money that we're talking about had to be borrowed. And then you pay interest on this. And then that goes on. Then there is the threat of interest going up. And then there is this effort by the financial and monetary people to keep the interest rates artificially low, which compounds this whole thing. So there's an economic cost in there that is very difficult to measure. But believe me, it's very significant and something that if the American people knew about this, they'd say enough of this militarism. And there's hints that we're making inroads, changing some people's minds that it is time to come home. And of course, if we had as much propaganda going out for our side, or our facts going out from the and compared to the propaganda of all the major medias, people would say enough is enough. But unfortunately, our effort is not as broad. But we have truth on our side, as far as I'm concerned, and eventually the people will wake up just out of, you know, being realistic, because we can't continue to do this in the pretense that what they're doing and spending all this money, they're making us safer and freer, which is a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, it's good that you mentioned the propaganda, because, you know, we have an article on the Institute's website today written by our great old friend, Representative John Duncan from Tennessee, who's on the board of the Institute. He has a great article. I encourage everyone to go to the Ron Paul Institute website and read it. But this is a great little line that he has in his piece. He says the PR agencies in the future are going to go back and study how the Pentagon's been able to convince Americans that the bloated defense budget under Obama was somehow gutting the military. Yeah. You know, it is a real PR snow job. But, you know, the Watson Institute study, they broke down this amount of money, and they find out it's going to equal $23,000 per taxpayer to pay for this war. And I think, Dr. Paul, maybe that everyone should be sent a bill. That might change things.
if the American people had to pay as we went along, there'd be a lot less wars, a lot less taxation, a lot less government spending. And that's the reason we need to get rid of the withholding tax. And that's a deception on the people. But there are a lot of, other economic costs as well as social costs. But economically speaking, there's a lot of misinformation that wars are, you know, pretty good for the economy. People go back to work, unemployment rates go down, and people think that has solved the problem. This was the case when World War II started. People said, at least that ended the Depression. Well, it didn't end the Depression. People were living maybe more poorly during the war, and millions were dragged off to go and risk their lives, and many got killed and wounded. And they say that it's good for the economy. Total nonsense. And even just yesterday, I heard a commentator on TV talking about this wonderful thing about the Navy being built up. And it was wonderful that that Trump wants to have even a bigger Navy, and he's already proposing another $70 billion to build up the military. But she was talking about this, and she says, well, just look how good it is for the job. It takes thousands of people to build these massive ships and to maintain them, and it was just wonderful. But she has not ever heard of Henry Hazlitt. You know, instead of what would happen if we had an opportunity to take this $5.6 trillion plus all the disadvantages of this and actually allow the people to spend this money? Maybe there wouldn't be half of this population, screaming and hollering because their standard of living is going down, and their cost of living is skyrocketing, and good jobs are going overseas. It just wouldn't happen if we didn't endorse this nonsense about an economic benefit by endorsing military Keynesianism, what it is. So conservatives are every bit as bad as the liberals as far as endorsing Keynesianism and job creation by government spending.
I mean, the economic ignorance is so prevalent. It's so upsetting. You know, what good does this big ship do the rest of the country? You know, it's ridiculous. But the other part, and this is you mentioned earlier about the interest payments. You know, this big war has been put on the national credit card. And I read an article on Defense One, and I think it's relating back to the Watson Institute study. But they said because this war is being fought on borrowed money, the interest rates to pay this off, you're going to have $8 trillion in interest charges before the thing is paid off. So you've got to stack $8 trillion on top of this cost already. It's astronomical.
And, you know, the other thing is harder to monetize, but probably from my viewpoint could be the most important. And that is the social costs and the cost for liberty. When you just think of the last 16 years since 9/11, the wars have expanded. They didn't fully understand what was going on, so they thought the answer was that we had to do more of what we were doing, which was part of the problem. So the misunderstanding has, you know, led to more problems. But there's a social cost, too. When you think of all of the people have been sent over there, and now we have an epidemic of military veterans committing suicide, and nobody really talks about what is the harm done when individual have been sent to the Middle East, not one or two or three times, but many times, disrupted the family life, more divorces, more distortion. And it wasn't just, you know, the full-time enlisted people or the volunteers. It was the people that were in the reserves that didn't realize that they'd be sent over there many, many times. So there is indeed a big cost of this. Some of them come back dysfunctional. It's more difficult to hold jobs. And it's something that even if you tried to put a dollar amount on it, you couldn't do it. But I think also what really is threatening is the whole fact that war is the health of the state, as Randolph Bourne said. And when the state gets bigger, guess what? Liberties get more minuscule. And think from the very beginning of this era of war in this century, it started off with the Patriot Act and NSA and all this intrusion of our personal liberties. And people believe that you have to do that because our security is threatened. So therefore, it is expected that we as individuals must sacrifice our liberties. And I used to say in the campaign, and it would get a lot of support, is we should never consider sacrificing liberty just because we think we might be a little bit safer or more economically secure. Besides, it's not true anyway. It doesn't help us that way. But I think the destruction to liberty is one of the biggest costs of policy and the wars that are going on, along with all these economic and financial problems that it creates.
You talk about the cost to the military. You know, you may have seen this, Dr. Paul, but there was a report that came out a few days ago saying that the military is so desperate for people that they're starting to lower the standards and take people even with histories of severe mental illness. And we talked on the show a while ago about this motion to recall pilots, Air Force pilots. So they're trying to get these people. And now another thing that we notice is a Gallup poll talking about an increased level of support among Americans for mandatory service, for a draft. So it's, you know, these are real costs. And, you know, the drafting, I think, is big. I don't know. Did you see that study?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, it's again, another example of the loss of liberty when you have this war mentality. You know, we haven't had a draft since, I guess it was 72. And that was great that that we quit drafting people. But they never got rid of the Selective Service Act, registering people. And while in Congress, of course, I introduce legislation probably annually about getting rid of the Selective Service. Because the assumption is that the government owns you, and when they need you or want you, they're going to send you there. And then if there's social discord and there's other problems why people aren't doing well, maybe as a consequence of war, well, we need discipline. We're sending them into the military for discipline. But if you know anything about the military, it's not exactly the right place to think that you're going to discipline individuals and teach quality character by doing this. So, yes, I think this is a disaster. I think there are two things that make an assumption that the government owns us. One is that all of our income is at the disposal of the government, and they tell us how we can spend it and where we can spend it and how much we get to spend. And the other is the threat of the draft. And the fact that these wars aren't going well and people aren't volunteering and they're going to take people who have mental problems and put them in the military, you know, I think there's reason to be concerned that people will come back, you know, and dictate, you know, a draft again. And this service will be designed as being patriotic. You know, if you have to be patriotic, and other countries have it, and therefore it would be to our benefit, which again is part of this mentality of these perpetual wars. Because I remember so well, you know, what happened in World War II, Korean War, and Vietnam. So it was great when they got rid of it. But if they were serious about this problem, they would repeal Selective Service. Besides, our government knows where everybody is. Don't you think they know where everybody is when you turn 18? Because they send you a note. You're 18. You forgot to register. So yeah. It's a terrible, terrible system. And that's why we should never endorse the idea that the government owns us. We're supposed to be in charge of our own lives. And unfortunately, that is not the case. And the more militaristic we get, the more we're involved in wars, the less of this recognition is there that we are responsible for our lives.
Exactly. And you know what's interesting about this new Gallup poll about mandatory service is 49% of all Americans are in favor of this, which is dangerously close to 50%, which is, I think, quite dangerous. But here's something else. If you read down the age group, I'm sure you'll appreciate this, Dr. Paul. It's the least popular among young people. So only 39% of, I think, 18 to 24-year-olds think this is a good idea. But it's the most popular among those 65 and older. 66% of older Americans think, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. Get these kids and draft them into the military. So I think I thought that was a little humorous.
Yeah, and you know, why depend on somebody that's 18 years old, doesn't want to go, and doesn't have much experience, compared to the guy that's 50 or 60 years old, and he's been successful in business, and he's a millionaire or a billionaire? I would think that they should be drafted, you know, and put into the service. But that's not the case. But I have a better idea. If there's going to be a draft, the first people to be drafted are those individuals who voted for the draft in the U.S. Congress, and they should go. You're first to go, and you're in front of the line. If you like that war in Afghan, you can go out there and patrol and be exposed. I imagine there'd be less declaration of war, or not. They don't even declare. Allowing this to happen and letting the president go to war without them saying much, which reminds me, you know, of the whole thing of Yemen. You know, it turned out that the effort to make the Congress think about declaring war in Yemen, that one didn't work out so well, did it?
Yeah, they had to. They watered it down. The Rules Committee messed up the resolution, which should have been brought under the War Powers Resolution. They watered it down, and as it turns out, the only people who voted against this watered down were the original people who had the original resolution, saying, "Hey, we need to address the fact that the president has taken us to war in Yemen without an authorization." So it's funny how that does turn out. But you know what you've always said, Dr. Paul, is that if this country is attacked or under threat, you're not going to have to draft Americans to come to the defense of their country. And trust me, you and I both live down in Texas. There's not going to be any problems down in Texas if people start coming to mess with us.
Well, you know, the fact that that legislation turned around and actually became a detriment and in a way supported what they were doing in Yemen because they weren't challenging it. I would say there's still a swamp in Washington, and there's been not much cleaning up yet. And, you know, I wanted to check once again, you know, and I've done this before, especially with my recent book on the revolution at 10 years, is what's Trump's position? And, you know, there was confusion on my part, and I went back and Reed looked at this, and there was reason for confusion because he was on both sides of the issue. He made some good statement. Oh, it should always be voluntary. At the same time, we should put everybody through this mandatory service. So I don't know deep down in his heart what his position is on that. But I think that he's probably, my guess would be that he would be supportive because he's so, you know, so complimentary to the military. There's one other thing before we close I want to mention, and then I'll have you close, is this idea of another loss, and that is the loss of telling the truth. You know, there are more lies. The government lies to us all the time, and they lie to us on this finances. But as soon as there's a war about the danger of the war and why you have to sacrifice, I think truth-telling by governments even gets worse. But by the very nature of government, they usually lie to enhance their power and to subject the people to be obedient and to cough up their wealth so that the government can be financed for the special interest. But it's much worse under wartime conditions, which leads to a very dangerous situation.
Yeah. And I would just close by saying, you know, I would like to think that we could win the moral argument against a global military empire. But we have to be realistic, and I think the Watson Institute does a great service by simply breaking it down into financial terms. Americans need to understand that their pockets are being picked by very wealthy, connected people, and it's not benefiting them. So I think if middle America can understand the real costs to their future, their children's future, their financial future of this military empire, I think we have a chance of really winning that argument.
Yes, and I would like to mention once again about the economics. I did talk about the social cost and the cost of liberty, which really is an ultimate cost. But the distortion and the misunderstanding of economics bothers me a lot, because too many people think building battleships and aircraft carriers and spending all this money, it's good for the economy. Absolute nonsense, because there is a saying that comes from, you know, Bastiat's The Law and Henry Hazlitt saying, you know, you always have to ask, instead of what would happen if these trillions of dollars would have been left in the hands of the people and would have then gone into higher wages and less inflation? Inflation comes because they borrow this money and print the money, and who pays for that? The middle class and the poor, because their standard of living goes down. So it's intertwined. You know, I started off in politics thinking a lot about monetary policy and economic policy, but as the years went on, I came to the point where they're mixed in. Foreign policy is very mixed in, and all this military spending in this pretense that they're separate from economic policy. There was one debate we had in the presidential race. They say, tonight, what we're going to do is, last week we talked about economic policy, tonight we're going to talk about foreign policy. And I objected. You can't talk about one with the other without the other. How can you talk about foreign policy and not deal with the economic cost? Anyway, this is a very important issue, and we were delighted that we could talk a little bit about this Brown University finding and study. And Daniel, I thank you very much for being with us today from Virginia. All right, very good. And I want to thank our viewers for tuning in today. And please come back soon to the Liberty Report.